DERs. DERs and subways are consumer products, and utilities may or may not have any influence from the purchase decision all the way to the end of that product's lifetime, or they may have a lot of influence. Those are consumer-driven ideas, and there are companies who want
to... Do you want to come on the other side? Because there's a few people on there, so just to kind of keep the
sure.
balance. It's the same content.
Sure.
And you're standing, so...
Standards
if anyone else as well wants to join, maybe one other, just so we have a good balance?
I'll go.
You'll go.
There you go.
Thank you.
So you get the basic idea? So, you know, we're going to try to talk through what the business model is, if you will, for the distribution utility going forward 5 to 10 years. We're not going to answer the question, but we're going to come up with a series of hypotheses. And what we're going to, the way we're going to do that is we're going to use this work board. And what we've done is we've kind of set up 5 questions that'll kind of help us frame the topic that we're talking about. What we'll do is use these post-it notes. So rather than one person scribing and trying to capture the essence, we'll take a minute to think about each of these questions. You guys will write a few thoughts or ideas that we'll then put up on the board, and we'll use that to then kind of discuss our thinking around that. We're going to reconvene back in the plenary room, and each group will sort of provide a couple of quick sound bites on some of the thoughts that the group came up with together. Does that make sense? So far? We good? I think everyone has met, but just in case, let's just go around the table real quick if you want to start, Steve.
Steve Greeley with CenterPoint Energy out of Houston.
Jim Richardson, Landis and Gear.
Ronnie Sandoval, Great Lakes.
James Lester, Colorado Public Utility Commission.
John Ryan, Exelon.
Jerry Oliver, TVO Global.
Peter Shaw, EY.
Excellent.
So let's start with kind of talking through, we're talking through this board over here. Not that everyone can see it clear, but I'll move it up. So again, market facilitation, meaning what does a distribution utility do on behalf of or for customers on their side of the meter? And what do we believe about customer experience, how we need to evolve that dimension of our service offerings? So, distribution services of the future, we're coming up, we're setting out some premises, if you will. Affordability is going to be something that's evolving, both in terms of the technologies that customers will have the access to, like the price of solar and storage coming down. We're going to see material shifts in DER penetrations and EVs. So we're kind of making that assumption that if utilities do absolutely nothing, DERs and EVs are going to grow. Those are consumer purchase decisions. Energy markets are going to, so growth for the market participants, there's going to be a need for utilities and other suppliers in the value chain to figure out how they monetize all these new offerings. And how does the market price signal the price for the value of those resources that are generated on the customer side, whether it's a storage or a vehicle that's draining into the grid? How do you price and indicate the value of that, and how do you then tariff that? So, but we really want to think about, you know, putting the lens on the customer, and then what utilities will do 5 to 10 years from now. What does that relationship look like? And are utilities banking that as a new opportunity for new earnings and top line revenue, or some other attribute of that model? So if you think about the wholesale market over here, wholesale markets are going to need to see price signals that integrate renewables and decentralized power all the way to the endpoint. So distribution utilities are still going to have to work with RTOs to figure out how these different DERs are going to get priced and how they're going to be part of the regional mix, right? So the way the wholesale market, the way it's structured, the players in that wholesale market, the design of how day-ahead prices are formulated, how that maps to flexibility of DERs, all of that's going to be central to the business model for distribution utilities. Then we've got the network, and then we have all these customers on the other side of the meter. We're saying that DERs, and this is what we've heard all day, DERs and EV are coming whether we like it or not. The question is, how do we integrate that? How do we protect the grid? How do we make that equitable for all customers when not all customers will be able to afford these fancy new DERs and EV charging stations? Just more of the themes that we're looking at. So when you think about a five-year plan, one of the things that EY has published is these tipping points. And one of the tipping points is, as Jeff mentioned, when do EVs become cost parity with internal combustion engines from a life cycle basis? We're saying between 2023, 2025 in most markets. And so at that point in time, the calculus for EVs could yield a much greater penetration of EVs. Depending on whose models you look at, that could triple, that could be order of magnitude growth by 2025 or 2030, but it's definitely going to be non-zero. Same with DERs, as the cost of solar plus batteries comes down, gains parity with at least the commodity portion of your electric bill, or when it gains parity with the total electric bill, including distribution. Those dates are between 2028 and 2040, depending on what part of the country that you live in. So these tipping points are part of our horizon that we're looking at. What we're encouraging you all to think about is we're saying between 5 and 10 years, some of these things are gonna happen quicker than others. But basically, if you just have 2030 in your mind's eye, where are we going to be doing in 2030? What do we need to plan for? What do we think makes sense for my company's strategy? Then I think you're looking at it fairly. Three basic business models that we postulate. One is that of a platform provider. Second is an energy optimization platform. And the third is actually providing settlement. So in the settlement scenario, that's sort of the ultimate. If you guys have followed what's happening with the REV process in New York, that envisioned a case where every distribution utility was a little bit like a mini RTO for their own region. They're actually making the market, setting prices, and that's going to unleash lots of demand for DERs, because investors and people selling these products will have a way to monetize their marketing efforts, and customers will have a great value proposition because they'll be able to take advantage of pricing that is delivered right to their meter. So that's sort of the ultimate scenario that really puts you in a DSO. I mean, that's basically Australia's view of a DSO. The platform is more of an enabler, where you're more agnostic and the utility is going to provide the mechanisms to allow third parties and wholesale providers to see the prices. They will basically be a traffic cop, right? And the optimization is model is where the utility is in a more proactive role. They're actually taking actively measures to protect the grid. They're taking they have the ability to actually dispatch load that's set up behind the meter through different kinds of tariffs. So it's sort of a range of different possible models that we just kind of talked about, I think, a lot today. So if you think about that being sort of a range of possible outcomes, why don't we jump to the questions? First of all, did you guys have any thoughts or questions on anything that we've outlined on the board here?
It seems like that's a progression, platform optimization, settlement. That you can't do the settlement until you have the platform. And that you actually work through. If you can't jump from platform to settlement, then part of the pricing equation for settlement has got to be optimization. It's got to be trading feeder A off against feeder B, or something intermediate on the distribution system.
Right on. So that could be viewed as a maturity curve,
yeah,
from one perspective, mm-hmm, or it could be that this is the end state and we don't go beyond that because we're not going to have the alignment politically, or we're not going to be given the relief we need from a policy.
Yeah, it seems like the folks that are talking about the platform as sort of the end state don't yet see that settlement is part of that. but they do see other things, non-electrical things that are part of a platform offering that where the network effect begins to deliver value to them.
Right.
And I think to the to what level of concentration do you have to have with DER in your area or on a particular circuit in order to make it worthwhile to move to those other points? Mm-hmm. And then how do you set your regulatory and legislative folks up to help move this along? Because it's not always, I'm going to speak for us, that it's not always the regulators that get involved. If you can't work, with your regulator, you do it politically. You get it made law. But one way or the other, you can move this stuff along if there's a business case for it. But you've got to have a certain amount of saturation. Like, what's the criteria for deciding, and I guess there's a business case for it as to how much DER penetration you have to say, I'm at a point where one of these fits this particular model or capability, or that it makes it worthwhile to transact that way.
I think that may be right if when you think of DER, you think of physical things like batteries and PV and that. But if you expand that to simply flexible load, then you may already have plenty.
True. Yeah, I mean, if you're using it to optimize your investments by not, upgrading a transformer because I've got enough DER penetration that we can shift the load around and carry things without me having to do anything in the substation. That's one way.
Yeah.
But then the settlement piece of it is still there. You're probably net metering all these folks at some point, even if you don't have a market condition.
Yeah, from that perspective, net metering is kind of a brute force form of settlement.
Right.
One size fits all, no marginal localized pricing on that.
Yep. It is whatever it is. Whatever you're paying
time
is
doesn't
what
matter.
Time doesn't matter, location, yeah. So like three good points, just wanted to make this. So first of all, the trajectory, this could be viewed as more of a longitudinal perspective on the maturing market. Mm-hmm. You brought in the idea that, well, this may not make sense until you've gotten a certain level of penetration where you've got liquidity. Mm-hmm. And you've got some scale so that there's a business case for putting in the investment into the systems that will enable all that, let alone where you're actually running basically a full-scale market maker function. How much interest on the consumer side do you need before that stuff makes sense? And then how do you set up your own capabilities internally to track and understand that and sort of build the business case? What's the ROI, and then when do we present that to the legislature to provide that air cover for that?
How many folks are doing deals with Nest? Portland General has rush hour rewards, and it's not even really a heavy, peak issue for them, but it does offset some investment in infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And, Nest came to him and said, by the way, I think we have about 30 megawatts of capacity already in your service territory that your customers spent on it, and all we need to do is turn this switch. Mm-hmm. Want to do a deal? He said, yeah.
It's low-hanging fruit. The utility has zero upfront investments. They pay a one-time setup fee and a monthly charge.
Mm-hmm.
So it is truly the low-hanging fruit for a demand response.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with that is, how much are you going to really get? Nest says they got 30 megawatts, but how much is coincident? How many times will the consumer change that setting, override it? So, but it's low hanging fruit.
I think one of the things that they brought to the party that was unique is because we used to turn stuff off. SMUD would turn off air conditioners on the hottest day of the year, piss off customers. And what Nest knows is they know what the U value of your house is because they've seen your air conditioning and heating systems all behave in accordance with local weather. And so they can pre-cool and preheat. So the customer turnoff, which used to be a big deal with SMUD and the air conditioning control program,
right,
is almost non-existent because Nest takes care of having the customer be happy and
yep.
flow through that peak period. But that's sort of just the opening salvo in where can you go with flexible load.
So what would be your view of the ultimate truly integrated, you know, a real resource asset in terms of flexibility that thermostats can offer to fill your duck curve or, you know, dispatch economically? What's your vision of what the 2030 version of the connected homes thermostat might look like? Exactly what it is today, or is there another dimension?
No, I think there's that you get more, as prices of other devices come down, battery storage, some of the electric vehicle manufacturers get over that. No, you're not going to discharge that battery. That's my project. That you'll end up with more devices than simply space heating controls and water heating controls. I think the key, the predictor of success will be if the issue of that New York Rev actually brings up a sort of, can we apply transactive energy to manage the distribution system to be efficient, effective, sustainable, and reliable, resilient. Did I get another R word in there? If that puppy works, it's yet to be shown, then I think you begin to see echoes. You know, you already got California paying a lot of attention to, and New York paying a lot of attention to California, and Hawaii actually changing their perspective on PV and having it be an active part of the grid instead of a pain in the ass. So I think, you know, you'll see templates of where this potential is, and as each one knocks off the big thing, then more will go like, oh, wait a minute, he did what? And the legislature will say, oh, yeah, so they're paying these guys because it's cheaper and more effective to do it that way. And you begin to see legislative dominoes kick over as well. You've already seen Illinois reward ComEd with a massive increase in energy efficiency and a rate of return on it. You know, that's sort of a big deal. Energy efficiency is a big part of the pie.
Yeah, there are a lot of utilities gunning for that deal right now. I know Public Service Electric in Jersey has a huge filing that would set them up for years earning on energy efficiency. And they're very good at doing it.
Yeah.
So that's in their wheelhouse. Yeah. So bang it. Why don't we, can everyone get a pen? Got plenty of pens here.
I'm wearing blue. I guess I have to have a blue pen.
It's black here.
Your pen doesn't work. Just pick another one. Sometimes they're old. So the idea is not to be right. You want to lean towards provocative, thought-provoking, if you will. So don't feel like you have to defend it with evidence that your idea or your observation around where we're looking 5 to 10 years is it makes sense or not. Let's just get top of mind ideas. You can write a sentence, you can just put a few words together. But the first question that we're gonna all kind of meditate on is, what would the role of the distribution utility, how will it change relative to services behind the meter and the customer experience? And you don't stop at one, you can do four of them, whatever comes up.
Both 5 year and 10 year, or just 5 year for now?
You know, if you have a thought around 5 year that you think is clearly in that very near term frame, you can frame it that way. If it's likewise, if you think it's something further out, then you can frame it that way too, and we'll just kind of group them on either side. I'm not so freaked out about the 5 or 10 though, because it's all very near term.
Yeah.
10 years.
You want to really make us nervous, you got to call it 3 and 5.
About how much time we have to save the planet, right?
So, yeah, we were talking in the other room about sort of the consumer motivation perhaps tailing off with rush and then dissipation. But if the motivation is climate change, and I think a lot of it is, then the worse it gets, the more there will be motivation. And it may stay steady, or it may increase, but it probably won't taper off. And that'll be a surprise for a lot of utilities.
You got an extra tricky one just because of you don't own the customer.
In the first question? Yeah.
Just
yeah.
A bit.
Yeah. We don't have any of the retail relationship, right? But we're trying to change that anyways. So some of this stuff is a way for us to do that.
You know,
some of it is a way for us to re-engage the customer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of the things I put is, you know, to be the advisor and educator of things, right? So
right.
Our
advisor
role needs
and educator.
To be that, right? That we will help people figure out maybe what their solution set could be for their particular challenges, right? Because we are not in it in that way. So it's a way, I think, for us to be thinking about how we re-engage a relationship that we gave up 18 years ago.
So being a trusted advisor as the
yeah.
as a distribution utility,
yeah.
what does that look like?
Yeah.
What are they trusting you to advise?
We have no play in the game on what your pricing
right.
issues are.
Right.
You know, maybe we can be agnostic
so
to that and help them. You know, we've got all the data.
Remnant.
Right? So I've got all of your data. We understand our grid, but you know what we can talk to them about which set of solutions, whether that's you know solar or whatever localized.
Would that require a change in regulation as far as providing you
everything
latitude?
Does, right?
yeah.
I think that's your last question, right? What we need to be doing now is
yeah.
how do we think ahead from a regulatory and policy framework to allow us to be that enabler of
right.
all things, right? And
yeah,
I don't know the answers.
I do advisor and enabler is very, very different.
Yeah,
because enabler it may be more than a connection.
Yeah,
and getting a bill correct the first time. Enabler may mean actually providing software tools,
could be
providing
sure.
a mechanism for transparency on pricing. Then you're into systems investment and a whole bunch of regulatory parameters around consumer protection and
yeah
it's almost like you know because of the ERCOT market it's a wires company and you have
yeah.
marketers and you have the market
right
and none of that reflects the new values of the existing network at the distribution level. That's old school
invest and get a return.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you almost have to think of, well, is there a mini RTO where the marketers, the retailers, get to transact with you guys around an infrastructure offset that's separate from the wholesale market?
Yeah.
Because
all of those constructs could be looked at. I mean, you know, whether that's the end customer or the marketers as a customer, the wholesale market as a customer to this distribution grid.
And it's important because there's a lot of thought in the rest of the country about, well, you know, that Texas model seems to be working. It's got a lot of wind and, you know.
So I think just to frame what you just said around, especially in the Texas market, and right. they don't own the retail relationship, but having an offering around non-wires, I think you were describing,
right. Yeah.
Where there is an incentive or a tariff that pays based on the offset of the need to spend capital. So they're actually paying your distribution company, paying customer for the value of the resource they're providing, that's really measured by offset or deferred capital expenditure.
Right.
Is that a non-wire solution?
It's actually made more complicated.
I think the way you're talking about it is.
Yeah. Yeah, that one is a non-wire solution. But it's made a little more complicated by the retailers are busy trying to lock in consumers with offers around solar PV and this and that. The other, you know, they have a motivation of, I want to keep that customer for longer than 24 hours. And so they're busy looking at customer lock-in.
Right.
It's a fascinating, difficult thing.
Hmm. Okay. You're up. You got it.
I got, in the 5-year, they begin facilitation stuff, services, sort of just being helpful. There's the potential for like an Apple App Store tax or fee, so that the transactions that happen, just a piece of that transaction goes to the distribution utility for facilitating that transaction. It follows New York code.
The other big thing about a retail e-commerce type of product and service delivery?
Right.
Okay.
And then a big fundamental transformation is getting used to big data and analytics. You know, you can't really do much around understanding that along this feeder there are these critical pieces of change that need to happen, unless you can actually examine that whole thing in real time, not just kind of, you know, the every 5 years capital investment plan.
So 5 years, first sort of walk before you run. Start facilitating access to in-home products and services, maybe take a little toll payment along the way, cover your costs, maybe make a little bit on the side.
Exactly. That's that one.
Facilitate, okay, so this is not...
Yeah, they probably fit together. And then big data.
And then big data, clearly needing to understand a lot better customer behavior as it relates to consumption patterns and use of appliances and charging.
As well as your own infrastructure. You know, for somebody big like Bonneville Power, big data was, oh my God, synchrophaser data coming in 60 times a second. Wow, that stuff I read about in the textbooks, it's really happening. I can see it.
So you guys on the utility side, what kind of AI or machine learning have you begun to... Are you testing use cases around some of the AMI data that you're collecting around understanding consumption patterns and how it relates to things like dynamic pricing, anything like that going on?
We're not doing that.
Obviously, you're not doing that.
But you'd love to. We are doing a lot in the just in the analytics environments, right, on what you name the ridiculous amounts of data that we're trying to piece through to make it.
Yeah.
But not on pricing. You know, not on those things for us. It's more around asset system,
upstream stuff,
predictive type things that we want to get to, and what, you know, can the bots help us figure that stuff out, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not looking at the pricing either, because, you know, our return, I mean, we get return on equity from a capital investment standpoint, and then the other pricing mechanism is just, it's not the price of the energy, it's just a pass-through, whether it's gas or electric. That's just a pass-through to the customer. So whatever it is, it is. The model has to change, obviously, in this particular case, if they're generating the energy, and where does that offset some things? And does that create curtailment on the transmission side? But we're not looking at that. We're more looking at patterns of behavior, leveraging five of our six utilities all have AMI data. The sixth one may get it.
Is that New Jersey?
Yeah. But because I know PSEC's pushing for it, and we're going to push for it for ACE to try to get it, but we got to wait and see where that falls. But the we've still got to be able to just, you know, work through a lot of these areas. So a lot of the analysis that we're doing is more on use cases for either data improvement, just making sure our systems are accurate. Mm-hmm. You know, your meter to transform the comparison to make sure they're actually on the circuit they're on. You know, is your GIS data correct? Is your AS switch working right? And then, I mean, just some of the fundamental blocking and tackling. I think in the coming 5 years, we got to like make sure we got all the data fixed. I eventually believe that we are going to be. I mean, that's one of the things I put is I think we're going to be a service provider, but we got to own and maintain our information, because the aggregator, and I quite frankly believe that we've got to, I don't think we want aggregators in our network. I think they'll undermine what we're doing. They'll become somebody else between us and the customer.
Welcome to his world.
But I mean, but it's our job to influence that. You know, you can either sit, you can go the way of Hawaii and like, you know, fall on your sword and mess up because you didn't listen, you didn't do some things, or you get out in front of it and you manage the relationships not only with the regulators and the legislature, but also with the customers. And you deliver good service. It starts with having good reliability and things like that, but that's just the fundamentals. You know, there's so much more that's got to happen beyond that.
Mm-hmm. So just to rephrase, like I understand it, third-party aggregators will actually introduce risks and potentially slow things down, whereas if the Exelon utilities can provide that kind of ability to monetize or, you know, integrate all of those behind-the-meter resources and get the same benefit to the customer or the developer that an aggregator might have done. Mm-hmm. But now you're basically playing the singular role of integrating it with the distribution system.
Yeah, so my belief is, many of you ever had a chance to go to Japan, there's a smart city demonstration over that works really well, and all the homes are that way. I mean, I eventually think that that's what's going to happen with a lot of our homes, and whether the thing is, you know, will the whole community get their way? I don't know, but individual homes, I think, are going to be at that point where, you know, you're going to just be managing everything over the web. So cybersecurity will be highly critical to that. I hope the distribution side doesn't become NERC-SIP required, because it'll just drive costs through the moon. But at the end of the day, I think that's the value proposition we're going to have. People continue to demand more and more. You know, and it's not just the power. You know, we used to deliver light bulb grade power and everybody was happy. You know, you go home, turn it on, it's great. Now, you know, I think we're going to have a rise in inductive load because everyone's going to be putting more electronics in their house and doing more of these things, and then the air conditioning load's going to go up, so they're going to have to run their air conditioning systems harder. And
throw a few EVs in the neighborhood.
Yeah, exactly. So we're just for the longest time, when growth, you know, there was no load growth, you know, or you know, everybody's changing the light bulbs out and actually having a drop in growth. Well, now it's going the other way. It's like you're really starting to climb, and you're really looking at it from a system planning standpoint. What do I do to meet the demand?
And how do you plan? I mean, it's, you know, EVs are going to grow at 30% a year, but they're so focused in certain areas. You know, your low income areas are not going to see EV growth.
But your low-income areas might see DER.
Yes.
If the legislators are throwing money out, and the problem then is that a lot of low-income areas also are on 4 kV circuits. So you can't get enough fault current. So as long as they'll give you a return on equity, you invest in upgrading them to the higher voltages. But even then, there's going to become a saturation point where you're always going to run into that voltage head point on every circuit. This is all I can put on here, and I can't put anybody else. And someone's going to complain, and the regulators just have to be educated enough to know, well, yeah, it's limited by the system, you know? And you can't then also go back to them. It's sort of like what used to happen in the gas business, like, oh, yeah, we extended the main out to here, and you're two blocks down, and you want gas. Well, you're going to have to pay for the whole pipe extension just so I can get you gas, you know? Because the regulator wouldn't allow the utility to get recovery because there's only one customer asking for it, you know? The same thing may happen in this where, you know, you've upgraded these circuits once and they gave you return on equity, but then they become saturated because so many people put in, you know, because the subsidies are that attractive.
Was this yours?
That's mine.
So I can switch was yours? You were just speaking to
me. It's in the 10-year.
This guy's one over. So you talked to these?
No, that's mine.
Next one over. No one.
Thank you.
There. Yeah.
So become a service provider for power quality, efficiency, optimization.
Yeah. And then also set up a reason to invest for innovation coming down the road. So if our infrastructure's got to be able to meet all these innovations, why do I care about putting it in until I absolutely have the demand for it? So you either got to set up the regulatory market to allow the degrees of freedom for the people to invest, but they're you're going to get your return, you build it out, now it's sitting there and it's waiting for all these people to come on board.
Yeah, you're waiting for them to come.
Yeah, as opposed to though, I need it, I can't give it to you, and they're all complaining about it. They're like, look, I can't build it fast enough. You know, and in some of our jurisdictions, like, it's so conservative, and you try to talk to this a little bit, it's like, hey, look, don't wait until New York Rev happens here because you won't be able to run fast enough. We won't be able to build it fast enough. Yeah, you'll have a mechanism to get recovery, but everybody will be complaining because you're just not getting it done on time. We've got to take some risks and have some foresight to allow us some degrees of freedom to get out in front of this stuff if we want to be that aggregator.
Boy, that's such a great point. What were they both, the other two here?
Own and operate charging stations.
Okay.
I think that nobody, so... You can't just run around and pop these things in without working with system planning and understanding the long run. And I don't think they're going to want to spend the money. Oh, yeah, I can upgrade that. I'll upgrade this circuit for you so you can put your charging station in, but it'll cost them a mint. I think the only ones that are going to be able to do this is the utility because it's for the betterment of everybody. Anybody who has an electric car can just
pull
up. You
have the bigger
up.
Picture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's still a... It's a broader grouping, you know.
Yeah.
You making any headway in Illinois or PA, Maryland with that piece?
I think Pennsylvania is so conservative, you know, that I think Pennsylvania will be the last one to change. Illinois, on the other hand, you know, FEJA is pushing that whole thing of get out and do all this stuff. So I think Illinois will probably be, you know, Illinois and Maryland, you know, will probably be that. Washington's a funny place. I don't know about what Pepco will end up doing.
That's just an island of itself there. Excellent.
You got three people that decide everything there.
So. And then promote and monitor efficiency.
Yeah.
You want to talk through your points real quick?
Yeah. So basically,
time check.
Hiya, just to confirm timing, so 10 more minutes on this session, and then move on to the regulatory one that's another 30 minutes. Unless gotcha. You feel this is going really well and you just want to kind of be more flexible.
Yeah, we're hitting these and kind of out of order, but we're doing great.
Yes, so as long as we finish by 2:15, it should be fine.
Gotcha.
I can go last because mine's more of a regulatory issue anyway.
No, we like it, go ahead.
Yeah, so as... More DER is going on the grid. Utilities are losing the sales, even in the areas with decoupling, and it's still not replacing everything. So, and as the EVs come up, maybe making up some of that revenue loss, utilities aren't going to want. Right now, they don't really know where the utilities are, I mean, where the EVs are going in, and they need to be able to manage. Just unmanaged EV loads for utilities is very dangerous, and they don't really want that. So in order to deal with both the rising DER and then managed charging programs, we're going to have to, in terms of regulatory-wise, come up with some sort of incentive structure to help the utilities deal with that lost revenue. Right now, I think the utilities would be happy for those incentives, along with the current cost of service model where they're earning ROE on everything else. But I think for my perspective, 5 years, you're going to have that mix. But then as we get further along, we're going to go more to the performance-based rate making, moving away from the cost of service and that not a guaranteed ROE, but the commission-based ROE structure. So.
Yeah, you just made me think about something. I think the labs have a huge opportunity. Like, if you think about this, we're trying to build common infrastructure across the country, and we've got degrees of competition doing all this stuff, but we don't have common standards, and we don't have common regulatory framework, and so we can't leverage the market for the benefit of the customer. We got so many one-offs and so many different ways of doing this that, you know, and I look at this, if I look at selfishly from our standpoint, I got 6 utilities in 6 jurisdictions. And we want to do things as much common as possible, because then we can leverage our spend in the marketplace and ultimately deliver that same level of service at a cheaper price, which helps all the customers. But the regulatory framework gets in the way of doing that. But a lot of cases, the regulators actually listen to the DOE for a lot of advice in some things. And maybe that's the place where we can help drive some standardization, is if there are some, you know, similar to what happens with FERC on certain standards, you know, if we could get something similar on the distribution side, it may help out a lot in this emerging market of all these new things that are coming. What's that?
Where would you start with the standardization?
I don't know. Either from an EV perspective or DER perspective, these are market change. They're the things that are really going to have significant impacts on how we run our networks, because they're the things that ultimately the customer makes a decision on. And so, if we had some sort of standards for what they should be. And then allow those the folks that manufacture and produce those things or install those things to come with certain standards, would be great. But
so you're talking about interoperability standards?
Yeah, or? Interoperability standards, configuration standards, so that ultimately when the utility either has to go buy this or interface with it, you know, everyone does it the same way. And ultimately, we get a price volume variance analysis that, you know, because we're building so much of the same way and doing it the same way, it lowers the cost.
So that's, you're talking about the cost of integrating.
The cost of integrating and just the cost of construction or the cost of build out. I think that would go a long way to help help regulators, for one thing, who sometimes are not technical, but are trying to, you know, and same with policymakers. I tell you, the scariest thing I ever heard one night was I go to Washington a lot, and I got a box in this cigar bar called Shelley's back room, and I'm sitting there with these two guys I usually run into when I'm there, and this young kid sitting across from me, and he's telling us how, and he doesn't know what I do, and the two guys I'm sitting with know, and he goes, you know, electricity's gonna work just like this. And he waves his phone at me, and I go,
really?
And these two guys look at me like, I can't believe this kid's even saying this. And I go, well, I said, what do you do? He goes, oh, I work for a congressman and I'm helping to write energy policy.
No.
And I go, holy shit. And I go, so how's it going to work like this? He says, well, first of all, you don't need wires anymore. You know, everything's wireless. You know. And I go, he goes, energy's going to work the same way. I'm going to buy power from California and I'm going to have it go to Illinois and it won't have to go over the wires. And I looked at him. I go, so number one, I said, this works with wires. If you think for 1 minute you've got enough RF energy in this thing to get this all the way to like Europe, you're on drugs. I said, there's a ton of wires. You may not have wires nested in your house, but everything's backhauled on wires. Secondly is, when you buy quote-unquote power from California, it still came from the local power plant near you. Look, get educated. I said, obviously you don't have a technical degree, so you don't know what you're talking about. Why don't you make sure you work with somebody and that you don't write stupid legislature that then just makes things that much more difficult for those of us that actually have to make it work. But, oh my God, it was like I've got kids that are millennials. I have three children that are all millennials. You know, it's just like, oh my God, don't be just don't act like this.
Hey, they're going to change the world, don't they?
Yeah.
With their wireless energy. But I guess to standards, I'm wondering where the gap is. 61850 deals with substations. It's all about interoperability. Open ADR deals with all of DER. Duke Energy came up with the field messaging bus pass it on as an open FMB.
But I see how the regulators interpret the standards or how they want them implemented or whether they allow
you to. It's as much about educating policy and regulators as it is about
reducing the tax. It's not that the technical side doesn't understand how to do it, it's around how it's being applied and implemented. So I can take the same standard, I can go to six different states and it's applied a different way, which drives my cost structure differently, or how I either procure those things and then share them with customers or not. And then now I have to get recovery for that.
Yeah, I think with AMI meters, EVSE, mm-hmm. Smart inverters, we're developing standards and and other things, but the things are changing so quickly. Commission doesn't want to say, yes, you're going to use this standard because things are changing so quickly. But I agree, we need a way for the commissions to say, have a kind of a ongoing, this is the best standard, without having to go within each filing and specifying you're using this standard, and then when it changes, have to go back, and there's a whole regulatory process that gets all fouled up. So yeah, if we can all, and I think Elbit, Lawrence Berkeley National Lab is kind of the best place for that's keeping track of all of this information, especially for the regulatory commissions. But
so that would be helpful. There's probably the best intervention is at Maryland. Right. Because otherwise, it's a state-by-state slog. And yeah, if somebody somebody in the middle just did a big rehash of everything smart British on a pretty disciplined fashion. And so those guys are pretty well state-of-the-art at this point. They kind of understand what the landscape is, and they set down some rules for it, and they aren't like rehashing old stuff because they took the time to educate themselves. But you know, how can you replicate that across all of your?
You have to make sure that all that information actually makes it to the record where these proceedings are being discussed. So things like Green Button Connect as a standard for sharing data, Data Guard for protecting the information, it's helpful. You know, they might see it as NARUC, but you may have a utility proposal, you may have, you know, something that's a little bit more, maybe it's an energy service company, or maybe it's a separate intervener, might propose adopting certain standards or certain approaches in terms of how one might report it, how one presents data to the customer. It's important to actually be able to introduce accepted standards from other jurisdictions, how those are applied in order to really have an informed, ensure that the commissioners make an informed decision as to what to adopt and you know, what's necessary and what's you know, perhaps you know, going beyond and not necessary for the specific application.
Well, could you start maybe without, maybe you don't immediately start promulgating new standards that standards board embrace,
right?
But you start with, you know, a bunch of utilities getting together under GridWise, mm-hmm. and kind of laying out first sort of principles around the evolution, maturation of the distribution function, set of principles that everyone can kind of agree to, at least get regulators kind of habituated to. This is directionally where we're heading. This is what we need to do, and start building from there and getting to the point where you're getting regulators to generally agree on the how-to piece of it, not just the general.
Time to flip to regulatory.
Yeah, I know. I just wanted to give you guys a quick chance to speak to your bullet points.
Sure, just and very quickly. So I think, especially in the early stages, I think the utility might begin to operate potentially a marketplace of energy services, energy products and services, ensuring that the equipment that the utilities relies on to maintain safe and reliable power are actually maintained and operated in a manner that preserves reliability, and then you'll start seeing some targeted energy services transactions at like Brooklyn Queen of Demand Management, where various energy services are procured in order to meet a specific problem like demand growth in a congested area.
Right.
Data collection would need to be essentially ramped up in order to be able to report on metrics that communicate the level of performance of these new and emerging applications, and ensuring that incentives to utilities or energy service providers are actually based on the actual performance of those services. And you know, one thing that one can do is think of a what would a fully functioning market look like, and then sort of take a step back as to what's actually feasible and necessary. Because in New York and in other places with this veto proceeding, you can try to figure out what's the most, the time-dependent value for every single energy resource, but what's actually practical that's not going to be, creating more roadblocks in the short term to get everything right, and how do we actually just begin to get customers familiar with the concept of compensating energy services on a time dependent manner.
Or where they're.
Or where they're locational based, exactly.
Right. Cool. So you want those down?
Yeah, I wrote them neater. Yeah, so you can have them.
Yeah, we'll put them up there. Yeah.
Real quick. So first and foremost, 5-year, we got to give the consumer greater visibility.
Yep.
They don't understand how they're using energy, so that's the first step. And the technology is there within the coming few years to have autonomous behind the meter control. In other words, give the consumer the ability to set it and forget it. Hey, I only want $150 electric bill this month. Mm-hmm. And have that programmed in so you can have autonomous control behind the meter to start shutting off loads to be able to create that utility trusted energy provider that helps them manage energy better.
Do you really think, I mean, this goes back to the prosumer thing, but
yeah,
like I just, you got your millennials, but like, are they gonna care? I just feel like
care about
like all of this stuff is predicated on like this really smart and active consumer that fundamentally is like, I'm out, man. Like, I don't want to do any of that.
Yeah, well, see, right now.
They want to outsource it to somebody.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Somebody,
have the utility,
right?
Be that, yeah. Outsource model.
Yeah.
All the consumer has to do is say, this is all I want to pay.
I just think that's part, yeah.
And, yeah, and I think you just have to have the right price incentives. We haven't got those price incentives, the differential, especially with the time of use rate. You just got that. Show them, if we control your load, like he's saying, this is how much you're going to shave and save. And if
you do all this work, spend all this time, you're going to save $5.
Right.
Whatever,
that doesn't
right?
work. Yeah, that hasn't worked so far.
Yeah.
So
I don't want to mess with any of that.
In
stuff,
10,
right?
10 years, you extend
yeah.
that to
yeah.
literally facilitate the autonomous transaction, the blockchain.
Right.
You know, where
peer-to-peer.
I'm selling directly to my neighbor what I'm not using.
Yeah, right. I'm away for the weekend.
Yep.
I like that.
Well, or the scenario I've had is, it's amazing how
yeah.
smart you become as your children get older.
Yes.
and it's even more amazing is when they get married and they're living on their own, and it's just like, holy, you know, they're like, they have this epiphany, and it's like, yeah, okay, nothing's changed.
So here, we need to switch gears in the interest of staying on point. So we have about 25 minutes, and a lot of talk today, a lot of energy, I thought, in the room around, again, you know, policy and regulation ultimately sets the guide rails for what distribution companies want to do, can make money doing, can protect their shareholders carrying out. So super, super important, right? We set up five questions here, looking mostly at a state regulatory level, although I believe federal has an important role to play and will have a transformational role to play if they get involved. But let's open our minds to either state or federal, and let's ask this question. Give me, write them down, give me your wish list of policies or regulatory reform of any kind that you would like to see happen in the next 5 to 10 years that would empower, free up, encourage utilities to move into this future state role we're describing around really enabling all these resources to transact.
Are we doing that for all those questions or just the top?
You know, we only really have time to answer generically.
Got it.
So don't worry about the specific questions. Just what are the goes to this first question. What policies are needed to de-risk this wonderful energy transition we're talking about?
So I work for the Chief Operating Officer of Exelon Utilities, Kareem Kazami. He works for him.
Two levels down.
Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, three, because I got another guy between me and her. But,
okay.
But it almost, but he.
Because she last year did an awesome speech on platform and kind of like.
Oh, Ann did?
Yeah.
At Grid Connect?
Yeah. So Ann has like. It's weird. All the utilities are independent companies.
Oh, yeah.
Are holding companies.
Just
Exxon Utilities is technically not a legal entity.
Right.
But, so everyone is in that
guys
part
know,
of our shared services. That's part of the deal.
There's so much meat on every one of these. We'll just talk about
them. So we're all legacy.
Company had a similar setup.
Yeah. We're all legacy of somebody.
Right.
You know, Kareem came from BGE. I came from PICO.
Right.
Only I spent the last 10 years in nuclear before I came back on this side of the business. So, you know.
This is great stuff. Okay. Let's just go in those two directions. This is you.
Two key points. One of them is you can't de-risk the transition by staying with the old reward model. So if we went to performance regulation instead of return on investment capital, then at least you begin to break the mold. And that the transition is going to have to be done on somehow breaking the mold in the gentlest way possible, but breaking it. And the other is
but breaking the mold in order to in what are you replacing with that form of regulation?
In this case, it would be performance regulation. That seems to be the theme of what's the alternative to capital investment. I don't know. Maybe there's better. The other is sort of the openness to experiment. You know, New York Rev took a long time to just kind of like, well, what the hell's a landscape?
Yeah.
And then the recognition that we don't actually know whether any of this is going to work.
Yep.
So let's not punish utilities for trying it out.
That's top of my list is embrace technology and pilot programs.
Right. So you have to turn to a way of saying you're going to be made whole, even if it fails.
Yep.
So that was my two takeaways.
So both you guys.
That was the top of my list.
We need some R&D. We need some time to test drive some of these ideas.
Let it bake.
Right. Vocational, is this?
Mm-hmm. No, that's me.
Okay.
See, so I've got, first and foremost is location and time-based DER pricing. I think net metering's been a great policy, but it can't last forever. And that's the next stages of that. It's going to be.
Have you read the Veeder order from the DRC Commission?
Mm-hmm. And then California is doing similar work with its locational net benefit cost analysis for its distribution system planning as well. So there's a lot to be learned. Take it slowly, but fascinating. Like I said before, performance-based incentives, aggregated demand response, and then I think it's important for I use the term beneficial electrification to talk about electrification of homes and buildings along with EVs.
So rate basing.
Rate basing it to start and then move that to performance-based incentives. Yeah.
When you said aggregated demand response.
Yeah.
Specifically empowering the utility to do that or
third parties?
Third parties, mostly.
Because there's a third party in California who's already marketing that.
Yeah. And I think, but I also think that goes with EVs and fleet management as well. There's a lot of opportunity, but doing demand response on a one-off basis, just not a whole lot of
benefit. What policy, either legislation or regulatory definitions would be needed for this to take off? Is it pricing? Is it?
That's a good question. So here in Colorado, we have an incentive for utilities to meet their demand response goals. And I just don't think there's been enough work for, say, a pilot project. We've got, I think pilot projects are the right way to go about that, to be able to aggregate a whole thing in order to either achieve above what they have been making on their incentive or some other mechanism. So.
But mechanisms that will be needed to monetize.
Right.
Financial incentives for DPOs.
Yeah.
That's your stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah, just like if you want to get going, people aren't going to invest. They're all worried about, And the other challenge is some folks have, you've heard the negative piece of it. People have gone out and had solar put on their house, and then they can't sell their house because the people can't meet the financial commitments that went along with what looks like a second,
it's a second lien on your house.
Yeah, and now you can't move your home. So, I mean, there's got to be some way of unburdening that or unbundling it so that you can move this forward. So if you really want this to happen, if you're really worried about the 2C or 4C temperature change difference, then you got to move. You've either got to develop more nuclear, or you got to do, you know, DERs.
Yeah. So when you say financial incentives, that means incentives to developers and end users, customers,
all
or incentives to the utility.
Oh no! Across the board. There's utility scale one, which would be on the regulatory or legislative side. Then there's also the tax incentives or some other incentive from a federal standpoint on to get customers to buy in, like go at it holistically.
And that's your view is that's taxpayer financed, or would that be somehow baked into rates so that it's
well, it could be both. It could be a combination of both. It's hard. So the thing with rates is someone else gets and someone else doesn't. So the one who doesn't get it's still paying for that, you know.
Right.
You get it the same way from
the
tax basis.
Could this be federal, or is this more likely state?
I think it's at the state level from the utility perspective, you know, like whatever the legislature is going to do. I think at the federal level from a tax perspective, I don't think, the capital investment is huge, and most state income taxes are pretty low. So I don't know how you'd ever get the write-off to get some kind of payback over time, unless they're going to let you aggregate it over a long period of time.
Gotcha. So then allow utilities to control and monitor customer DERs.
Yeah. So in some states, you can't touch it. You're not allowed to do anything. You can't interrupt it. You can't do anything. And it's like, look, we've got to have a conversation about this. You know, we talk about a safety and culture, yet I can't shut their system off, but our people got to go work on it hot. Or I don't know if I'm getting reverse power flow because I don't have a system there to monitor it. You know, so you can't just, you know, this is a systemic thing, so you can't just change something over here and expect not to have an impact over here. You got to allow those degrees. You got to allow the utility to do its role in a safe manner. And from a system integrity standpoint, sometimes you got to shut them off because they're causing voltage problems to the greater good. It's no different than tree trimming. You go out and tree trim because you're trying to increase reliability. The person whose tree you cut may be pissed off, but you just saved, you know, 300 other people on that circuit from that tree falling and, you know, tripping the line.
So something along the lines of when interconnection happens, or even if it's not interconnection, it's just putting a charger in your garage, the utility has to be told about it, and the utility has to be granted some access to it.
Well, and there may be a connection fee if there's an impact. There's other mechanisms we got to put in place to make sure that we've got the right information, we're monitoring, and we have some level of control, whether it's just isolating it or being able to manipulate it if we're going to get to a certain level of monitoring. You know, can we curtail their load a little bit?
Got you. And then set energy prices such that it makes sense to invest in DERs and compete with conventional generation.
Yeah, if you want folks to actually do two-way power exchanges and things like that, then you've almost got to create a market for it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and I mean we've seen what's happened. I mean, eventually you got to allow the degrees of freedom. You know, I think the wind subsidies, you know, have lived their time and probably ought to go away because, you know, they create negative pricing mechanisms, and so at some point that's got to go away. But you've got to at least have an incentive there to say, you know, am I willing to buy more solar capacity than I need so that I can sell it to my neighbor or just put it back on the grid, which ultimately helps, you know, presumably reduce our carbon footprint. So we're going to need to do something like that. I don't think people are going to do that on their own.
Everyone pays for T&D infrastructure.
Yeah.
So everyone pays for the expansion of transmission to bring on utility scale and distribution to embrace all these distributors.
Right, because if you're going to use it, you don't buy, you know, so right now the way your bill is broken out is you've got a generation charge and then you got a T&D charge. But some folks want to go completely off the grid except for when they need it.
Yeah.
Well, it can't be sitting there waiting for you and you're not paying for it and it just sort of shows up.
Yeah.
You know, If you want to be totally off it, okay, then you're totally you're off it. Yeah. You're off it.
Cut you at the transformer.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
I think all of that, I mean, just it kind of speaks to the, you know, like the level of complexity, like the stuff that you just rattled through in the last 5 minutes. And yeah. None of that is easy for a consumer to go do. Right? You know what I mean? Which then puts the utilities back in the business. Man, you guys are impossible to work with, man. I just need you to do these things. You know what I mean? And yeah, we're back to like, the people that are blocking everything, because we need answers to all of these things before we can do anything, because we have to have a reliable and safe system, right? But it's like, I struggle, like we always struggle to get through that.
Yeah.
You know, that you end up just, we're the bad guy again, and we're blocking the progress that needs to occur. Yeah. You know,
well, we got to do a better job of scripting all this too for our call centers. So people do call, you know, so how do you, and that's the other thing too, is how do you cut down on the call times? Because you can automate all these things, you know? Just like dispatching crews or setting some things up, you know? Yeah. You don't ever talk to anybody when you buy something from Amazon.
Yep.
But somehow they dispatch and get your stuff to your house. Well, it ought to be the same way with this. I need something done, and that's the level of service that we got to raise our game on.
Yeah.
That's where we need to get to.
So there's customer experience design, but we have to map this customer journey from their angle as well as all the benefits to the grid.
Absolutely. And get the legislator to understand, like, hey, look, this is where life is, you know, and you're in the way.
Maybe they might be leaving the way.
It depends on which state you're in.
Yeah,
but we need to do it consistently. Some are really good about it, and some are terrible.
Steve, what is the utilities' role in?
Kind of the same discussion, right? I mean, that's what are the answers we need? What is our role in propping up or accelerating, you know, the things that need to occur, right? So the regulators need to help us get through that.
It needs a part of policy.
What are the rules?
Right? What are the rules
of engagement?
What do you want from, you know, Texas traditionally, right? It's all market driven, right? We'll go there when the math works for, you know, the market. And is that too slow in some of these cases? For what the broader policy initiatives are, I don't know, right? But to date, we've been, you know, it'll happen when the market demands it to happen, right? And if power prices are cheap and reliability is good, then you don't need any, you know, people will show up when they want.
But right. Even so Australia had to have a complete crisis before they said, you know, that battery idea, that might actually work pretty well.
Yeah. Crazy enough to work.
And then the other thing I just was kind of maybe, you know, just things that we're haunted by is what can we own, right? Because we're not allowed to own most of these things, so it puts us in weird positions to go make them happen. So clarity around letting us go, if it's utility scale solar or localized, you know, storage or whatever the thing might be. Right now we're prohibited from doing any of it, so our hands are a little bit tied in being a good partner in pushing us through this, right? So there's just, I think there's some clarity that needs to occur to help us.
In the Northwest, it's sort of a transition from, you know, do you have to have PV on your roof? The really popular thing with the public utilities is community solar.
Yeah.
So they put up a big PV system, and then they offer it, and like within 18 hours, it's all sold out. You know, their customers have signed up to pay for it.
California, every single school has got parking canopies that they have solar, and it's community solar that people can buy into.
Right, right. It's hugely popular. Yeah. Sold out in minutes sometimes.
Here, so let's...
And still think you're looking at people it's still a finite group of people that is that active, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so there's a whole, you know, there's 90% of the rest of the population that's just not an active consumer. Right. Right?
But I think from a consumer perspective, it's a really great transition strategy, right? Besides saying, no, you can't put PV in that location on your house, like Hawaii used to do, and lots of utilities still do.
Yeah.
Now they're saying, by the way, I got a community solar project. You want to buy into that?
Yeah.
You know, it's problematic in your place, but holy moly, if you want solar, I got it.
Yeah.
And you know, then that just kind of softens, and now you're saying something really positive to the consumer.
It's good for, I mean, for renters as well.
Yeah.
It's important. It's important.
Yeah. Yeah. Or New York, where you have the rooftops.
Yeah, yeah.
Thousand people under that little tiny thing. Okay.
Just the second point. The first one's already been covered. Second point is really, you know, let's make sure the regulators put understandable retail rates that match wholesale pricing structures, mm-hmm. whether that's time of use, yeah, whether it's demand.
Yeah.
Make it clear.
It's got to be very clear. The outreach to the consumer has to be very good to be able to get them to understand that. They don't know what the difference between a KW and a KWH is to them.
Well, one thing I like about the California utilities and what they've been doing with the customer education engagement. I mean,
yep.
2 years of customer education about time of use before a single bill was issued.
Yep.
And that was required by regulation. Yep. That was all edict.
What are you saying? Are you saying the regulators need to do that for the customers or the utilities?
Well, the regulators have to set rate structures. The utilities can't.
Well, they approve rate structures. They don't set it, really.
You're right, but they'd have to approve it. So.
Yeah.
But we just need
a
way to get an understandable rate structure for the consumer. Makes it easy for them.
And I think it was helpful, again, that the commission in California told the utilities to spend $50 million on education.
Yeah, that was very helpful.
Because it was a full-scale TOU implementation. It wasn't pilots and targeted. It was full-scale.
Yeah.
So they thankfully, they did it. But yeah, I got you. And then, what do we got here? Now, technical conferences, open stakeholder processes.
Right, so I was thinking of risk from the perspective of whom. So we have, regulators maybe, the utility may have a great solution with a potential partner, but then the regulator may not necessarily want to, assign significant amount of dollars for a particular something that they see as novel or just emerging. So, having this sort of stakeholder process or a technical conference where you have potentially, different energy services companies, different utilities coming together and actually providing that information, gives the regulators the confidence that you need to actually make those decisions. And it also gives the utility a way of communicating, hey, we actually put this out there. This was an open process. We gave everyone ample time to make comments, and we all decided on this approach. And, things sometimes don't work out, but, we shouldn't necessarily be penalized for, going into this direction, assuming that everyone was on board with this. Another way to potentially de-risk certain things is, especially with, I used to work at Con Ed on some energy efficiency programs, and, sometimes the measures were so prescriptive that, you're locked into this for, 4 or 5 years by saying, we're going to do these many measures in multifamily buildings, but then over time you realize maybe this isn't the best approach, maybe we should reassign which measures, and that involves going back to the the regulator to actually do some course correction. So having the flexibility to say we're going to try a few things and we have the ability to scale up and down on certain initiatives. Mm-hmm. Also with Brooklyn Queens demand management project, there aren't one isn't the utility isn't locked into choosing the most cost-effective approach, because in that scenario, they actually want to see how, storage works with volt VAR and works with energy efficiency measures. So just providing that sort of, flexibility is also very helpful. And I forgot what I wrote at the bottom. But
it's a standardization
on
performance expectations.
Right. So, every single, for various, for an energy service provider, so looking at third parties, having some sort of standardization across different jurisdictions, so would actually help in the not being locked into, investing in specific specific standards that are only applicable in one jurisdiction,
right.
And then you'd have to, you know, incur additional costs. So customers see that additional transaction costs and third-party providers, and actually some utilities do. If Maryland is, you know, something, you know, someone's applying something different there than in Illinois or Indiana, you know, those things add costs and risks.
So yep. Common standards.
Right.
So last step, guys, take your pens and just put your name on your stickers. So we're going to summarize all this stuff for you, and we want to be able to provide attribution. Follow up with you.
The bad handwriting is mine.
Yeah, if you can't read it, it's probably mine.
So thanks. That was a condensed 90 minutes. It felt like we scratched many surfaces.
Hey, one more thing to think about, too. So as we keep talking about DERs, and I'll go back to my old business of nuclear, they're building micro reactors now, anywhere from 1 to 10 meg.
What are they building them?
Yeah, they're making them. And they don't have a market for them yet, but they're making them. But, I mean, if you pop one of those in a microgrid, because they shrink the EPZ requirements, or if they can make them out of thorium so you don't have a proliferation issue, then you don't have to worry about the utility side doesn't have to worry about the disruptive problems with DERs. That would create some
who's for this one? TerraPower?
TerraPower is one of them, but there's NuScale or
NuScale's the other one, yeah.
NuScale, but now but the Russians NuScale. Are working on one too. Urenco's doing one.
Great.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Nope, I'm good.
Hey,
John.
Richard.
Do you
want to get a card?
I do, in my bag. I'll grab
it.
Okay, great. Sure.
All right, gents. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I got one more John Hancock to put on there.
Okay. Is it all covered?
Are you going back in the main room?
Gotcha.
Can you write Terry on the one over there? That one, yeah, the really
Everyone
one
knows this is you.
In the first grade, my handwriting was really horrible, and it's worse.
Yeah.
Some of
I would tell you, my kids, my kids
getting
that
spider script thing.
They don't even work on writing anymore in school. Like, my kids' handwriting's, it's horrible, but I kind of have a hard time even telling them to care about it because right. They'll type their entire universe
that,
out.
I so fought like, that battle.
Right, I'm going like,
in my
why
kids
am
elementary
filling
school,
out
a, I yeah. lost.
Yeah. Analog
teachers
form.
Wouldn't do it.
No.
I just wouldn't need a digital
And it's
thing.
Not a thing, you know, like, okay, and you kind of like, okay, I get it. I think that makes sense.
I didn't learn the script.
Nope.
Yeah. Nope. But it's hard to even know, like, you can't tell, like, why that's working.
Yeah.
No, it's hard. They won't actually write a letter.